You're listening to The Mumcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. We talk about this week's comic, and in this week's spotlight, I talk about fish and chocolate. Around the mic tonight are...
Hello, I'm Nick.
Hello, I'm Jane.
How are you, James?
Hello, I'm James.
You've bothered turning up this week.
Well, just about. I'm here in body.
How are you, Jane? You good?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Had a good week?
Yeah. When I'm not at work, it's good.
Here you there, sister.
Yeah.
What about you, James? What have you been doing for the last three, 4 weeks?
I've been on a touring holiday of Europe in a rainbow-coloured caravan.
Have you?
No.
Is that true?
No.
Is any of it true? Are you even capable of truth?
No.
Do you even understand the truth as a concept?
Yeah, maybe. I'd look after my child last week. I was babysitting.
I've got fully working genitals. I managed to procreate.
No. Not fully working. Come on. And to be honest with you, erectile dysfunction in middle-aged men isn't funny.
Sorry, no, you're right, it isn't.
Yeah, only cat AIDS is funny.
Those poor cats.
And some cancers. I had to look after... Scarlet, which was nice.
She's lovely, though.
My wife went out for a Christmas meal with her friends.
How torturous was that?
No, she really enjoyed it because it was with her friends.
Oh, okay, not with work colleagues.
Oh, ex-work colleagues who are now friends.
Oh, okay.
Which friends. That does happen. I mean, Jane and I work together and we're very close friends.
Ex-work friends.
Well, we currently work with each other.
No, I meant...
Oh, I see.
Nicola.
Yeah, Nicola. Your wife. My wife.
But how torturous was looking after Scarlet for her?
No, it's a pleasure. It's nice.
For her.
What?
How was it for her?
It was...
For Scarlet?
Scarlet? Oh, I don't know. She seems all right.
Oh, okay.
Seems reasonably well adjusted.
She enjoys spending time with you.
I don't think it was scary.
Scary?
Yeah. Don't think it was scary. Weirdly scary. Don't think it was weird.
Is that how she talks, or are you taking the piss out of Jonathan Ross?
No, that's how she talks. It's really scary, Daddy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's adorable.
It is cute when we walk. I pick her up most evenings, or two evenings a week, from her nursery, and we have to walk by. We get the bus down the high street near where I live, and we have to walk past some houses that have some quite long, dark driveways.
Oh.
And she walks on with her arm covering her eyes and says, "It's scary."
Does she not understand that she's more likely, bad things are more likely to happen if you're not paying attention to where you're walking?
Well, I do try and say that to her, but she seems to think it's more important to shield her eyes from the scary driveways.
What is it with kids?
I don't know, they're a bit stupid, aren't
they? They're fools to themselves.
They are fools to themselves. And then she says she's got a boo-boo on her knee, and I said, well, it's your own fault, isn't it?
Got a boo-boo on your knee... did you push her over just to teach her a lesson about...
To the back of the knees, took her legs out.
That's right, yeah. She's a pull cue, back of the knees.
She doesn't find violence scary.
Yeah, there's your boo-boo. Who's the daddy? Well, it's me. It's because of the...
Parental responsibility. Yeah.
That's all on you.
Because of the spunk and your mum's womb.
I get the feeling you self-censored a tiny little bit then.
I know, I don't know if I did.
I don't know.
I can't work it out anymore.
So that's what you did last week.
I did that, and then my life's just been a whirlwind of Christmassy things.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm sure I did something. I watched a really good documentary about Rush on YouTube.
That's a band.
If you like Rush, if you've even got a vague interest in them, Rush, Beyond the Lighted Stage... is on YouTube. It's an hour and three quarters. Excellent in-depth documentary about Rush.
What song do they do?
Spirit of Radio, Tom Sawyer.
One that I'd know.
Oh. Spirit of Radio.
Can you sing it? Has it got a hook?
I cannot do Geddy Lee.
Is that one of the lines in the song?
No, why don't you look it up, Nick?
I want to know now.
No, be patient.
I don't know.
What are you doing, Chris?
I can't do Geddy Lee's voice justice.
What's a Geddy Lee?
He's the singer.
That's not a proper name, though.
His parents were Hungarian Jewish immigrants to Canada, so he's got quite a confused name. Geddy, I think, is an ethnic name, then you're being racist.
Is that all true, what you just said?
Partially.
Because you did just watch a documentary about him.
There's some partial truth in things that I've said.
I'm never entirely certain when you don't have Wikipedia open in front of you, you're saying is accurate.
I recommend watching it, it's excellent. I didn't know YouTube had full-length movie clips, and I thought they were always broken down into 15-minute segments.
I think illegally uploaded stuff tends to be broken down into segments, because they used to have a limit, but now you can have a proper professional account and have other stuff up there.
I wasn't aware that was a camp, but it's excellent, and it's free to watch, and I recommend it greatly. Neil Peart's political landscape I don't necessarily agree with, but he is the greatest drummer alive and writes very interesting lyrics.
Well, if I remember, I'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, thank you.
I do tend to tune out the bits with you in while I'm editing. Because quite often you're not here, and it means I don't miss you so much when you're not here.
Like I said, I only come here to do your spotlights now.
and what's up with
airplane
what's
food?
The rest of the week been like for you?
I've been thinking a lot about airplane food. What's up with that?
That's not true, though, is it?
It was a custard, Richard. And what else have I been doing?
I don't know what that means.
I've just really been existing. From day to day, I've been getting a little bit scared about the Mayan prophecy.
Oh, you have, haven't you?
But only it's just rumbling away in the back of my mind. I'm a little bit concerned. Read that very interesting article about really the nature of space-time yesterday. That was really good. She put a link to that.
The things you see in the distance are longer ago than they appear.
It was about the pillars of creation, and there's a supernova that exploded that is making, or as we look at it, is making its way to them. But the pillars of creation are surely destroyed now. They don't exist.
They can tell that there's a shockwave heading towards them.
That's right, and they're not going to... And I don't think even Sulu couldn't steer his ship into that shockwave. Because when Praxis explodes... Sulu is at that time, he's the captain of the Excelsior.
Which Sulu is this?
And Captain Sulu. And they... But
which version? Which Sulu?
Old school. Gay Sulu.
Gay Sulu. Okay,
and they steer the Excelsior towards it. And then, and the teacup falls off.
The teacup falls off?
I think the pillars of creation just going to be decimated. Teacups and all.
Oh, right, okay. That sounds a bit terrifying.
Yeah, it is.
You've managed to look at that and see what was a fairly straightforward article and paint a real thought picture of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Also, when you see lightning,
it's
a little bit of a distance away, but then you hear it a few seconds later and you can work out thunder. But there's a delay. Yeah, thunder.
That's right, yeah.
That's another thing that happens with time.
I was doing mind jazz.
That was amazing. Yeah. It's like, you're like Carl Sagan.
Oh, thank you.
In as much as someone who has basically... dimly understood all of the things Carl Sagan says and then just parroted them back out.
To be fair, dimly understanding things is the only way I'm able to understand. That's how I pass the universe, my friend. Dimly.
I feel a bit bad now. I feel like I'm compressing a couple of weeks of meanness into one episode.
I've learnt the word pass in the last 2.5 years, 3 years though. That's a positive, isn't it? Surely. Before I met you, Nick, I did not know the word pass.
Pars.
Or I wasn't aware of its meaning. So
you can probably say it better than I can.
Something positive has come out of this relationship.
There are certain words I just can't do, like pars, noir.
Noir.
Tomato. No, tomato I'm okay with. It's potato. I had a bit of trouble with.
Potato.
That just doesn't sound right to me.
And what's the other one that we had a hilarious conversation about it many podcasts ago?
Did we? Is this a callback?
Yeah, it is. Only I can't remember the word.
Callback in imminent.
Yeah.
Apparently, I can't say imminent.
There's two things I've got on the mental back burner at the moment. I'm going to blurt out at some point during the
like some weird informative Tourette's.
Yeah.
It's been quite busy at work this week, and my evenings have been packed. That's what I've been doing this week. Thanks for asking, James and Jane.
What have you been doing this week?
I didn't realise you'd finished.
He was just going to carry on if one of us didn't stop him or me.
I could go on for hours. Yeah.
It's been all right. Flashpoint finished. That was very sad. We were very sad about that. I've been playing lots of Halo 4.
Hmm.
I finished the main game, and now I'm playing through the episodes that you're supposed to play with friends, but I don't have many friends who play Halo 4. So I've been playing them on my own. And I'm managing. I'm managing to kill all the aliens. I don't need other people to help me. It's all good.
There is a certain tragedy about someone playing a co-op level on their own.
Yeah, yeah. It is pretty depressing.
Not that time of year. I want to feel uplifted at this time of year. Bring me some festive cheer, Nick.
I've been getting a little bit annoyed by, like, there's everyone's kind of talking about the main thing, and I think half of them are kind of joking, but it's kind of exhausting.
Apparently,
the BBC's almost reporting it like it'd be a real thing. It's like the calendar's just finishing. That's all, guys. That's all. Do you get all angsty when your My Little Pony or your Peppa the Pig calendar runs out of months at the end of the year? No, you go out and buy a new one. And you're not even an ancient Mayan, although apparently there are still Mayans around, I learned after referring
to... Is it Mayan or Mayan?
Mayan.
Potato.
Is it tomato? Potato?
Actually, I believe they've got... The Mayans had hundreds of words for potatoes.
Did they?
Mm.
Did they have a lot of potatoes?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Did they have any words for public... I want to say sanity, and that isn't what I mean.
Sanitation. Apparently not.
No.
Unfortunately, that would have been a really useful word for them to have. If only they could have expressed the phrase, I think we should stop putting all these corpses in our water supply, it's bound to do us no good at all.
In the long run.
If only they'd been able to put that sort of phrase together in their language.
Possibly we shouldn't be taking lessons or ideas of foresight from people who did that.
Although it does remind me, it strikes me as humorous, that an individual who's part of a society that's choking the entire planet to death with its overstretching of the resources they have had. Slightly ironic that I'm taking the piss out of Mayans who were drinking corpse water.
Well, but nobody's going to be, like, thousands of years in the future, nobody's going to be looking or listening to anything that we've said and thinking that we're somehow talking about the end of the world, and we should be paid attention to.
I've got a mental image in my mind now of the smash aliens laughing it up at our podcast in a thousand years' time.
If they are listening to anything that we as a species at this point, as a civilization at this point, are saying and thinking it has any worth or meaning, then frankly they deserve to be, like,
in the future,
Inca raptured or whatever, whatever the hell it is.
Oh, Inca rapture.
Yeah, I think it's okay to confuse Incas and Mayans.
The television presenter Ben Fogle had a dog called Inca. I remember that from the show Castaway.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. That was back when those shows were actually like sociological studies.
Yeah, they're social experiments. So your Big Brother's very much a social experiment. Yeah.
Yes, that was for about 5 minutes.
Yeah. and then Instagram changed everything.
When we're not worrying about Mayans or not worrying about Mayans or worrying about people worrying about Mayans or putting in weird last minute references to Instagram, we talk about comics on this show. We're the Momcast and we talk about comics.
Hi.
you've done that bit.
Like we were reintroducing ourselves, it felt appropriate.
You can talk to us about comics, including sending us audio contributions or any questions or any feedback or anything to
momcast@gmail.com,
which is an email account, so you'd use email for that. You can also talk to us all on Twitter at various times of the day or week if we can be asked to be on there. I'm on there all the time. These guys, not so much. I'm there at Nick Site. Jane is there at...
Jane Mom.
James is there at...
James Mom, but I'm very shy.
You are very shy. Mm. Generally, you can be relied on to break cover if Billy Bragg is mentioned. That's something I've noticed.
Oh, I love Billy Bragg.
You're quite fond of any vaguely lefty right on comment, like stuff that's going on as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't tweet about political stuff very often. And to be fair, it was our friend James that brought me out a cover about Billy Bragg. He sent a direct Billy Bragg, because I said I enjoyed the Rush. I'm railroading this, steamrolling this bit. I said I like the Rush thing. And Clarkey said to me, oh, but the lyrics are quite Randian, aren't they? And I said, well, yeah, they are in a way, although I'm not completely. I know Randian ethics are kind of the right, but they also speak of personal freedom, which I'm not against. I didn't say that, and maybe I should have. And then James just said, oh, Billy Bragg's a wanker.
I thought I was going to have to cut all of this bit, but that got quite interesting there for a second, so I think I'll leave it in.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't referring to specifics, but yeah, that is something that happened this week. Thanks, James, for recapping that little snapshot of your week on Twitter.
Well, that's just if someone wants to know how to engage me in Twitter, that's what it's like.
Okay, well, anyway, and we're also on, we are on Facebook and Google Plus and Tumblr sporadically. Best way to get a hold of us, though, is probably through Twitter or the email account, or leaving comments on the website. The website is momcomics.com. You can subscribe.
Find it on the internet.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You can subscribe to us in podcatchers. You're probably using iTunes because you're a hip young thing who's down with the kids.
Wicked.
But other podcatchers do exist.
Yeah.
And you can use those.
I'd like to create one called Podgobbler.
Podgobbler, you'd like that, would you?
Yeah, I just like the way those words fit together.
Gobbler.
Yeah, Podgobbler.
Gobbler.
And it would be, the logo would be a turkey with a pair of headphones on.
Would it?
Yeah.
Hello, monkeys. It's Mike Draws here again. And instead of doing the usual thing of advertising this new comic, Christmas Confidential, that's on the Mighty Jambo website, which happens to be notregret.com/Jambo. I don't want to do any of that. I don't want to advertise any comics. I want to sing a song, a Christmas song, because it's Christmas. And I don't want to say notregret.com/Jambo. No, do not think about that. So, today, because it's Christmas, I will be singing the song Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire. So here we go. Chestnuts roasting.
Should we talk about this week's comments?
Yeah.
Okay, Jane, you're first because you're doing a spotlight this evening.
I am doing a spotlight this evening, and I don't usually talk about my week's comics because I have a little bit of breather because I'm reading my spotlight.
Because you're coy.
Because I'm coy. But this week I had to talk about a particular comic that came out. The Black Beetle from Dark Horse Comics, $2.99. It's issue zero.
Ooh.
Yeah, an issue zero. Called The Night Shift, and it's by written and drawn. I don't think it's coloured. By friend.
Drawford.
By Francisco Francavilla, mm-hmm. who is one of my favourite comic book cover artists and is a very friendly person on Twitter as well.
What's he done covers for? Because you've talked about his covers before.
Yeah, he did one for one of the Top Cow ones, which was Gravedigger, which the story wasn't 100% what I like, but the cover was brilliant. Now you really put him on the spot. He's done lots.
No, you've mentioned him before. I was just wondering if there was one particular book he did loads for.
No, he's quite... I think I was reading the other day he's done about 70 covers this year so far. So.
And he's always like posting bits of art and stuff
on
Twitter.
Yeah, he does
Twitter
a lot of fan art. He loves Dexter. And he posts a lot of fan art of the show Dexter, which is quite good. It's an instruction comic to a four-part series that he'll be doing in the new year called No Way Out. So this is just an introduction to the character, Black Beetle. It's quite a nice instruction. There's an element of mystery, and he has to rescue somebody and fight some bad guys and escape. And then there's an evil villain at the end who's saying, "You got away before and I'll get you again." It's a really good pulpy noir sort of
Noir. 70s
superhero. Really good fun. Beautifully drawn. Really beautifully drawn. Story's really silly and funny. And it's really good. I'm be interested to see what happens in the four-part series that's coming out. There was something else I was going to say, and it completely went from my mind there.
Did James...
Hi, hello.
Did the Mayans, or Mayans, have a concept of zero?
I don't know. You're asking the wrong man.
Okay.
He did colour it, yes.
He did colour it, okay.
Yeah. It's really good. I have to say, I did pick up the last issue from the shelf in our local comic book store, so...
A lot of places might not have ordered in lots of this. Keep an eye out for it. That would be good.
Lots of cultures, ancient cultures, didn't know.
No, it didn't have a concept of zero.
I think zero is quite a modern invention, isn't it?
Comic companies didn't really discover the number zero until probably the 90s, I think. Maybe the late 90s. Mm.
There are Nazis and werewolves in this as well.
Nazi werewolves? Yes. Nazis and werewolves?
Both and together.
That's a bit scary.
That is terrifying, actually.
The only thing you can really make a werewolf, you can really do to make a werewolf more scary is for them to be Nazis.
I think so.
I think
you're right.
That Your sounds go. Good. Is it my go?
Yeah.
Shit. Okay.
I just want to go last. I never go last.
Right. Well, I got loads of comics this week. I'm only really going to talk about the ones that are quite low in their runs. So, X-Men Legacy continues to be really good by Simon Spurrier and Tan Engquat. It's number 3, and it's a $2.99 book from Marvel, which makes it even more spanky. Because you can buy 4 of these... For a tenner. I mean, you can buy 4 issues of 4 copies of this, but you could buy 4 $2.99 comics for a tenner in most comic shops in this country, which is a good thing. I mean, also, it's a really good comic, but I'm just saying that's a useful thing, I think.
Value's important in this day and age.
Yes.
We're all feeling the squeeze.
Yeah.
We're in this together in many ways.
Yes, we are, aren't we? Big society and all that.
Yeah, innit?
Really enjoying the story of Professor X's son as he, David Haller, as he tries to find his place in the world while also struggling with all of the different personalities inside him, and also being chased by a team of X-Men and also having to deal with like his own mission. It's possible that someone is screwing with him on the outside of his head and someone is screwing with him on the inside of his head. Most of this issue really worked for me. There was a speech pattern thing there's a group of samurai type people, and their speech pattern is one of those things that I think will probably really tickle some people, but it just slowed down my reading of the book. But everything outside of that I really, really enjoyed in this book. And, you know, it's the sort of thing that I think a lot of people will probably enjoy. I'm just a bit too old for things to be that much more complicated for me to read. Journey into Mystery, actually, this is it's been a bit of a week for books where I wasn't sure of the first issue, but I really enjoyed the second one. Journey into Mystery 647 is the second issue from Marvel of Journey into Mystery, but by Catherine Immonen and Valerio Schitti, and Jordi Belair doing the colour art. I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce the name, guys. I'm sorry, I can't do anything about it. It's the story of Sith, who is an Asgardian, who seems very troubled at this point. It's the first issue I wasn't really sure that I really wasn't sure that I understood. It was clearly establishing... making a proposition to the reader about what this was going to be about. That's the wrong word entirely, but it was like the statement that said this is what it's going to be about, and I didn't quite get it in that first issue until the very end. The art is absolutely gorgeous, but and the writing's pretty good when it's characters talking to each other, but I wasn't sure about the pacing in the first one. And of course I loved this when it was Kieran Gillen writing Kid Loki. But this second issue, I'm kind of glad I picked it up and didn't just quit out on it, because basically It's a really good examination of one of the few prominent female Asgardians, seen through this kind of weird feminist prism, where she's, and when I say a weird feminist prism, I mean she's not like that. There are issues with the way she's going about things. She's clearly very troubled at this point. She's just suddenly, and this is where I didn't quite get the first issue of this, she's suddenly manifesting this quite angry side to her character that I didn't know was part of her character before. But it's made for some really interesting interactions in this issue. So I really enjoyed this. It was good. Journey into Mystery 647, also number 2, as far as that story up goes. FF number 2, I didn't have my doubts about the first issue of this. I really liked the first issue of this. It's by Matt Fraction with Mike Allred on art and Laura Allred on colour. And the art's gorgeous, as you'd expect from that art team. It really pops. It's kind of got a really retro feel to it, while at the same time being really beautiful and crisp and modern looking. One thing that I do absolutely love about this issue, though, and I don't know how much it was intended to draw people's attention, but it probably was. There is a there are two people taking photos in one of the scenes. One of them is just clearly taking a photo on his little digital camera, but there is an honest to goodness newspaper man with a big camera with a gigantic flashbulb flash.
That's awesome.
And a little hat with a press pass sticking out the top of it, which is just perfect. What's particularly interesting about this, it really zips along and it's really poppy and fizzy and it's really fun. But this is the first issue of this, along with the first two issues of Fantastic Four, were really just getting the story going. And they were fun, but you kind of already knew where the story was going to end up because of the previews that had come out and you understood what the books were going to be. This is when things get really good. And you see the new Fantastic Four team who've been left behind dealing with being the new Fantastic Four team who get left behind. I'm not really sure how they're going to get on. It's interesting.
Oh, that could... a little bit of spice and conflict could make fun.
Yeah, should be interesting.
Fun.
And what's a little bit weird is they've got two strong people.
Mm.
Because they've got She-Hulk, but they've also got a person in the Thing suit.
Yes.
One thing I think they slightly mishandled with this is all of the promo material and all of the stuff we've seen up to this point has shown the four of them with the pink-haired pop star that Johnny Storm was shacking up with in the Thing outfit.
Yeah.
So you knew that was coming, but it doesn't actually get introduced until this issue, and it would have been completely out of the blue for me because I'd never seen that before. It's a bit weird.
I found it confusing in the first issue.
Avengers Arena number 2. This is confusing because I only talked about the first issue last week, so I don't know if they've got the first few coming out weekly. It's by Dennis Hopeless and Kev Walker with really nice colour by Frank Martin and Jean-Francois Bully. Although Kev Walker's the real star of this. His art is absolutely amazing. Now, the first issue last week's podcast, I was a little bit disconcerted by what audience this book was necessarily going to find. It's a little bit weird because it seems kind of, it's about a bunch of young Marvel superheroes who most of Tumblr and all of the other youngsters who are reading them tend to be a little bit perplexed about how they're being serviced by the publisher anyway. And what this does is it takes all of them and it puts them all in basically a battle royale situation where they're told they have to kill each other. Only one of them's going to walk out in 30 days and they're completely isolated and cut off. And it starts off pretty brutal. First issue, I enjoyed it except for one bit of writing that really stuck out like a sore thumb for me. But it's very... the whole design of it and also the logo, as James pointed out earlier on, it doesn't hide its influences at all. So the logo is very much like the Battle Royale logo. and there's lots of imagery in it that's kind of similar. There's a sort of a cast list with a red cross through the ones who have died. And it seems like, well, if you cared about those characters, this was going to be the sort of book that would just rub you up the wrong way from the off. And if you didn't care about those characters, well, they'd have to work really hard to make you care enough about those characters for there to be any real drama. And also, you know, it's about a bunch of teens. It's about a bunch of teens stuck in a situation where they have to kill each other to survive. And I loved Battle Royale, and I really enjoyed Hunger Games, but that isn't... But those aren't themes that people really dig on, particularly. And yeah, the first issue I really wasn't sure. This second issue is lovely. It looks like what they're going to be doing... Oh, also worth mentioning is that I did a review of it last week, and then we included a Max Barnard review, where he was much less positive about it than I was. He really didn't enjoy it, and I think that's probably quite representative of the way a lot of people have reacted to it. It looks like the model for this book is going to be, certainly for the first few issues, they're going to focus on a different character in this situation. And it's really effective, especially when the main characters focused on in the first issue were very sympathetic, but you didn't really get to know them. The central character in this one, I think she's a completely new character, and she's just lovely. Her surname's Riker, she's kind of a cyborg. You get to find out a little bit about how she ended up that way, and she's just such a sweetheart. And the way a story like this has to work is it has to get you rooting for as many of them as possible. If you like one of them, well, you're just going to want them to win, and you're not going to want them to be... There are going to be casualties in this. It probably won't be all of them, but there are going to be casualties. There already are. But yeah, a story like this, if you only love one of the characters, well, you're worried about something happening to them, but the dilemma in there, how are these people going, you know, at some point I, as a reader, am going to be faced with two characters that I like, or more characters that I like, and there's going to be a decision made by the story at some point. Sort of thing. You have to like more than one of the characters, and so far I've liked two, and I didn't know any of these characters before. So, and some of the kids from the Runaways are in this, and I haven't noticed them in this yet, but I love the Runaways. Yeah. So should be really interesting. Again, it's pretty bleak and cynical sort of a comic to be coming out from Marvel, but it does have a rated T for teen thing on there.
So parents be warned.
Very quickly, Witch Doctor continues to be great. Witch Doctor Malpractice from Image. Brandon Seifert and Lucas Kettner. First issue of this was great. It's a 6-part story. Go out, see if you can find the first one. Not really a lot more to say about that. It looks gorgeous, and it's macabre as hell, and it's really funny. This series so far has been much funnier than any of the previous stuff. And Where is Jake Ellis? I loved the first series, Who is Jake Ellis? This is $3.50, Nathan Edmondson and Tonsi Zonjic. It's beautiful, and the story's clipping along, and it's got a real Bourne Identity feel to it, the way the first one did. In fact, almost more so in this. I'm still not quite sure if there's going to be enough story across the 5 issues for it. I'm not sure if it's going to be one extended chase or what it's going to be. But it is gorgeous, and if you can find the first book somewhere in trade, you should definitely get that.
Yes.
No, okay.
I think we can all endorse that, even though I'm not reading it.
Have you read the first one?
No.
You should read the first one, buddy boy.
I'm going to endorse it based on your endorsement.
No, you can do that. That's
endorsed!
Fine.
You're endorsing an endorsement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm full of endorsements.
Ouroboros.
Oh, that's an interesting word.
Snake that is eating its
own
tail.
Ouroboros.
Ouroboros.
Ouroboros. From Red Dwarf.
Oh.
Ouroboros.
When Lister discovers that he was abandoned in, or when he tells a story about being abandoned in a pool hall, and on the side of the box it just had Ouroboros. But it wasn't.
It's Ouroboros.
Yeah.
Or Ouroboros.
And they didn't know what to call him, and they thought it was Ouroboros.
And they called him Lister.
Yeah. No, his name's Dave, actually, but
that's weird.
I don't.
It's a joke. from Red Dwarf.
I don't know what
it was. I was still watching it at that point as well. So I can remember that. I think it was in one of the books also, but I'm not sure. James, I just tried to call you Dave. I like Dave. Can we call you Dave from now on?
Yeah, if you want. Yeah.
Do you think Dave kind of suits
no,
him? You don't think?
No.
Ray.
No, Charlie.
Charlie's a good name.
The funniest,
Charlie.
The funniest human being I've ever worked with was a chap called Charlie.
Charlie.
He used to actually have me doubled over in stitches from laughing.
But you have me doubled over in stitches from laughing sometimes.
Oh, Charlie was very funny. He was mad.
And sometimes tummy upsets.
Yeah, he was very silly.
Tell me one thing he did.
I liked his story that he sent as a child a series of letters to Jim Will Fix It, where he's...
Hang on, where does this story end up?
Not with him being sexually abused.
Okay, good.
He sent a series of letters to Jim Will Fix It, and he said, I'm paraphrasing him, but he said he's a pragmatic kid, and he knew that he couldn't be asked to ask for actual a fix it. The only fix it he wanted was quite often kids would get gifts at the end, so he just wrote for gifts. So wrote a series of letters. I enjoyed he wanted the Chelsea strip, amongst other things, which I thought was quite funny. He saw the twins from Neighbours as he was driving past them in the car and went down his window and shouted "Oi Santa" at them, and they looked round at him and they were confused.
Why
twins?
Santa.
Just that's because he thought that would be funny to shout "Oi Santa" at them.
You know, when you started talking about how this was one of the most hilarious people you'd ever met, you were called on to start telling the story.
Was
there a flicker of doubt in your
head? Do you know what this story teaches us, Nick? Don't ask him to elaborate.
Okay.
He didn't tell funny jokes. He was just, he had a manic energy.
He had a way about him.
He had a manic energy that was very funny to be around.
And where is he today?
I don't know. I lost touch with him.
Oh. Maybe you should look him up.
No.
He might need a helping hand about now.
No, I don't. I don't want to look him up. I'd like to leave that lovely memory where it is.
Him walking off into the distance, looking over his shoulder and smiling at you and then fading out.
No, much as I
did. And then a little date at the bottom, like on the end of that that video about Biggie Smalls. Where he fell off the bike.
He's just a sepia tone, did he? He's just a
sepia... Yeah, I think so.
Thing. He's just sepia now. I don't like this.
And that's where you want to leave him.
I'm racist against sepias. Everyone's got their racism and their minds against sepias.
I believe that's your new Judaism kicking in.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about comic books because I do that too.
Sometimes.
When I bother to turn up. Rick Remender, John Romita, Klaus Janson and Dean White are all working to bring you issue 2 of Captain America, which I spoke about last time. Issue 1 was a lovely frenetic setup where Captain America got kind of duped into going through this transdimensional portal to fall into the hands of Zola. Zola Budd, the barefooted racer from South Africa. Issue 2 sees us 1 year later. For those events, so he got away.
All right, okay.
He got away, and now it's 1 year later, and he is trying to come to terms with surviving in the strange environment in which he finds himself.
So he's still
in
the strange environment.
In the strange environment. And Zola was trying to clone him, so he's got this sort of child with him, who is a boy, but looks a little bit like a girl.
He's got long hair, and are really old-fashioned about gender roles and stuff.
Absolutely.
Right, okay.
And the young boy is called Ian. No, it's not so much long hair, it's actually the sort of... His face is very...
Does look quite cute and girly, but some little kids do.
Ian.
Ian.
It's a weird name for a character in an American comic.
Ian, it is. Ian.
It's just... Yeah. Are people called that when they're born? I thought they just developed that when they got to the age where Ian is appropriate.
No, I think it's around about 18.
Are there many three-letter names that aren't a shortened version of something else?
I don't...
Ian must be one of the only ones. Ray, short for Raymond. Roy is short for Royston.
Rob.
Short for Robert.
Ross, without the extra S, if you're in that way inclined. Or Roz. Kim.
Kimberly.
Yeah, no, I'm saying they're all.
What's Ross short for?
Ross.
Like Rosalind or something like that. Yeah.
What about for a man?
It's short for, well, that's a four-letter word.
For a girl, it's usually Ross. R-O-S. Oh.
Anyway, so Ian.
We're not expanding this conversation out the four-letter words.
No.
Andy.
No.
Drew, both Andrew.
What's Drew short for? Drewbit.
Greg.
Alex. Oh, Andrew.
Alex.
Alex.
Hi, Alex.
Hi, Alex.
Hi, Tommy.
It's short for Dominique.
What was I saying?
His name's Ian. Oh, so and apparently that's
this has turned into a survival tale.
review has turned into a survival tale.
But within,
can James survive the review?
Within that, it's been a while. We flashbacks to Captain America or Steve. What's his surname?
Rogers.
Thank you, Jesus.
Roger.
Jesus.
If he was French, if he was Captain Rog, it'd be Roger.
Three-letter abbreviation of his name.
Stay, Rog.
So we have a flashback into Stay Rogers' childhood in the 20s, 1920s that is. And then
1920s, that is.
And the art changes up beautifully. And it remains frenetic and lovely and wonderful. The writing's superb and the art's lovely.
I was going to say, from what I can see when you're dipping the comic up and down, it looks pretty.
The only reservation I had with this book is it just ends really suddenly. And I spent a couple of minutes going, there's no end or to
there's
be
no end.
It's just a sound effect.
It just says
you need something to tell you it's
and
finished.
Then it's like, and then it's the letters page.
And then you're looking at the advert, you're like, well that's not the story, but it hasn't said it's stopped yet, so it must be.
It's got quite thick pages as well, so it's like the two stuck together.
And if you're folding it over as you went, instead of reading it properly, you know when people put them in the back pockets, they fold them over, you could literally have just carried on reading from the front again.
I have no idea how much I wish I had the bottle to carry a comic around in my back pocket.
In the old days, they were like worth tuppence.
Barely.
Mind you, back then, tuppence was a lot of money.
Well, it's worth £8, wasn't it?
The Marvel Universe is gonna. One thing I've noticed, I'm really loving a lot of the stories at the moment, but this just jumped a year and he's in an alternate dimension. Yeah. Fantastic Four just jumped a year and they're in a. Well. Mm. We know where they are in a year, and they've gone to an alternate sort of. It's going to get quite confusing. Mm. Some of the X-Men have come forward in time, and then at the same time, Reed Richards turns up in Secret Avengers, and I just don't know. It's all very confusing. They're already good so far, though, aren't they?
Yeah, very good. The other book I'll talk about. Greg.
Grant
Morrison.
Barrett
Robertson.
We call him Gramo.
Gramo.
And Darro.
And Darrobe.
Darrobe.
Darrobe. Darrobe. It's issue 3 or 4 of Happy, or end of act 2 info dump, as I like to call it.
Mm.
Which is lovely. It still centres around Nick and Happy. Happy being an imaginary friend of a little girl who is in grave danger. And Happy's trying to persuade Nick, the ex-cop who has fallen under the thing, under the
spell,
under the metaphor that I was unable to conjure up in my mind.
The thing, the bird,
to bail out from the sentence.
The blank
train, the bird, the ice cream, the popcorn, the worms, the beetle.
He's gone. He's a fallen angel.
He's fallen in the pit.
And now he's in the pit with the devils. He's a hitman.
So he went to tell an ancient Greek king that he would have to bow down before somebody else, and then he got kicked into a pit of despair.
That's correct in a metaphorical sense.
Yeah, okay. I don't really understand. But there's a blue rabbit thing in there, which is
good. Well, he's a blue unicorn horse thing with
feathers. That'll do.
Who's an imaginary friend. And there's. It's an info dump. So we have more. Dialogue between him and Happy. Happy obviously trying to persuade him to do what he wants, but also we have Nick's backstory to finding out how he came to be in this position.
I've always wondered about my backstory.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting.
Does it shed some light on
Nick with a K? You're not Nick with a K. Oh.
Yes, I am.
Yes, he is.
You're not.
Oh, you're so mean.
You're the girl. You're the girl spelling. and we have an unpleasant reveal at the end. That raises the stakes for issue 4 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. I enjoy it. Very linear for a Grant Morrison story. It's you rather snarkily said it's no, you didn't say anything snarkily.
No,
it does read similarly to a Grant.
to no, a book that you liked,
Garth Ennis book.
Yes,
but it's lovely. Talking is hard, isn't it?
It can be.
I forgot where I didn't do it last week. Finally, Chapter 8 of Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples continues lovely. Again, there's a bit of a theme, actually, in the books I read, in so much as all had quite sizable info dumps where you learn a lot about the characters' backstories.
I have not read Saga yet, so...
I haven't read it either yet. It's downstairs.
All right.
Up here,
well, we get to learn a little bit about how our main protagonist's parents came to meet each other.
Excellent.
As well as continuing the adults in the story have been split into teams, haven't they? So
yes.
Yep.
I completely forget their names, but the male character and his mother have gone to find the ghost who was cast from the tree that they're flying through space in. And then the female character and the guy's father are left on the tree, and there's some lovely moments where we find out information about the characters in both environments. And it's lovely, it looks beautiful. It's a lovely, rich world. Brian K. Vaughan puts really weird things into the world that just you don't need to explain because they just feel real. Mm,
it makes sense, don't
like,
they?
Well, because you explaining the plot then made it sound really ridiculous.
Well, thank you. There's in the early part of the book we meet the female character. What's her chops? We see her in her former life before they met, and she's with another member of her species, and they're clearly guards of some sort, and there's some to and forth between them. But she leaves to go and check on some guards, and the other character just turns around and talks to this weird octopus brain thing. Doesn't make any sense. It's not explained, but you don't need to. It's such a beautifully realised universe that this story takes place in.
I quite like, because it's only really been peripheral in the last few issues, but it looks like we get to see a page out of this. She's been talking about this book the whole way. They've been vaguely referring to the fact that she reads this book.
Yeah.
Or she's a fan of this author or something. Yeah. And that that somehow singles her out as some sort of subversive or something, doesn't it? So there's a book within this, which is always quite a nice little...
Yeah, and we find that book's influenced her very heavily for some reason. But it also highlights her character as being rather... I read it as being rather flighty and easily influenced as
well. Because they're supposed to be quite military, aren't they? And matter of fact, her race.
Yeah, whereas she's a very sort of... She's a very free spirit.
Obviously, don't spoil things, but how big are the biggest genitals in this issue?
Oh, they're way big.
Okay, good. Just checking. It's important. You need to know these things. Because last time I wasn't expecting them. They were right there.
Yeah.
Part of them are massive. Part of them really small.
Yeah, but that's how it is for some people.
I feel bad for those guys.
Well, quite.
Yes.
Thank you for your wonderful reviews of the comics, James. You're a delight.
Thank you. Like the Box of Delights.
Yes.
I don't think the BBC have made a decent Christmas drama since that.
What about all of the Doctor Who specials?
Well, William Troughton was in.
No, I was being ironic.
Oh, I see. So, and but it's all right. This year they've got a David Walliams one, so that'd be brilliant.
Oh, that'll be brilliant. Thank you for your review of your comic, Jane. That was brilliant.
Should we thank Nick for the review?
You don't
his
have
comics?
To. It's fine.
All right. It's David Wynne. He may or may not be cross.
Hello, monkeys. It's me, David Wynne, author of stuff, Particle Fiction, featuring Ideas Man, artist and co-writer on Hypergirl. You know who I am. I am contributing today on the subject of Hawkeye. By Matt Fraction, David Udger, and Matthew Hollingsworth, and I forget the name of the letterer. This comic is amazing. The issue 6 came out yesterday and is probably, I don't know if I'd say it's the best issue so far. I think that's probably issue 3, the car chase issue. But it's visually, for me, probably the best. Simply because of what David Ayer, or is it Ayer? That fella does in this issue. The entire issue is drawn on a 30-panel grid. Dark Knight Returns by Frank Miller was drawn on a 16-panel grid. Watchmen was 9, as most people know. Those are both considered to be quite dense. I did my first graphic novel on a 12-panel grid. That was quite hard to do. That was Damnation. Sold out now, so not really worth the plug. But that was that. But I can speak from experience that working on a as lower panel count per page as 12 panels, which most people would consider high still, but that is hard. 30 panels per page. Now, obviously, I don't think there are any pages in the entire issue that have the full 30 panels. But using that kind of structure for your page enforces a lot of rules for you, and it sets a lot of limited parameters on the way you draw your page. And being able to make that work is a sign of incredible ability. So that alone is impressive. Add to that the beautiful, beautiful drawing that Aja, that fella, does. His gorgeous spare drawing line, and the simple, clear storytelling that he employs. And you have something really special. There are also some lovely sort of visual gags. One of the pages is drawn to look like a side, or I think it might even be two of the pages, are drawn to look like a traditional side-scrolling computer game. You know, things like that are really quite arresting when you see them. I read this comic digitally. I read Hawkeye digitally on my mobile phone. So I only ever see the full pages. I have it set up. I have Comixology set up so that I see the full page before I go in, for each page before I go into the panel by panel guided view interface. And even so, I only see them on my tiny little phone screen. And even in that size, they look amazing. You can tell I'm kind of lost for words at how good it is. The writing is also fantastic. Matt Fraction has become one of my favourite writers over the last few years. Casanova is incredible, in my opinion. And Hawkeye is just... I mean, I'm not a big... corporate comics guy, really. I haven't read much of Fraction's Marvel work, so I'm aware that a lot of people don't like a lot of his work, find it maybe a little too mannered and a little flat. But his work on Hawkeye is just, it's so funny and clever, it's so witty, and again full of brilliant little formalist tricks. This entire issue, it jumps back and forwards, but is told over a period of 6 days, and you jump backwards and forwards within those days, and the 30-panel grid gives each page the appearance of an advent calendar, which is then played on with this theme of jumping from day to day. The every issue of Hawkeye opens with the same line. Okay, this looks bad. I don't know why that line. I don't get what the significance of that line is, but it's a lovely little trick to just give the series a certain tone. I love the fact that this series has all so far been, that the longest story has been 2 issues. So even though we're only 6 issues in, it feels like a lot has happened and we've had a lot of stories already. Hawkeye, it's just great. If you've probably heard people raving about it constantly, there's a reason, and that's because it's brilliant. One of the things I do find interesting is that although it is all done in ones, or in one case a two-parter, this issue, it makes it clear that there is a larger story taking place. There is a recurring antagonist, and this issue raises questions about where that's going. So yeah, Hawkeye. It's awesome, and I love it, and I have lots of reasons for loving it, and those are just some of them. I also read The Black Beetle, issue 0, today. I bought that on the Dark Horse Comics app by Francesco Francavilla. That is also awesome, but I don't have time to talk about why, because I can't email more than 8 minutes to the monkeys, and I'm now at 7:30. So I'm going to stop now. Merry Christmas, everyone, whatever you may celebrate at this time of year, if you celebrate anything. Happy holidays. Peace, love, dolphin-free tuna. This is David Wynne, signing off in a manner that's reminding me somewhat of Kiha right now.
So did anything happen in comics this week?
Well, I was on the internet, and Rob Liefeld...
No!
No, James. No, enough. You'll get spanked.
I hope so. By Rob Liefeld.
Oh, there is no need for that.
I'd like him to do that. I'd like him to do it with his big, weird feet.
I bet he would, too.
Yeah.
Has he got big, weird feet?
He must have.
So did anything happen this week?
No, I don't think so.
Things did happen this week.
Someone got Vertigo.
Shelley Bond is now head of Vertigo.
Congratulations, Shelley.
Not entirely unexpected. We don't necessarily know what's going to happen with Vertigo, but she is apparently a very good editor.
It's good, and an appointment from within, so hopefully it'll keep things consistent. You know, Nick, I believe she once reviewed Bevis, your collaborator in the short story anthology.
She did a portfolio review.
She said
she was very good.
Very positive.
Well, that's good.
That was definitely better last time around. What?
Ooh, never mind, I'll just cut it out.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's good. Again, we don't necessarily know what that means for Vertigo. Also, what else happened? Other stuff happened. Yeah, it definitely happened.
The world kept turning. I think, didn't Disney make an announcement about their...
They are not going to be renewing Dark Horse's Star Wars license. So what's it? So their license to Star Wars comics expires in probably a year or so's time, which means pretty much anything that's announced now will be playing out. So we'll still get our Brian Wood Star Wars comics, which I'm really looking forward to. I guess they're going to be using... I don't know if it's confirmed quite yet, but I guess they're going to be using Marvel...
You'd assume so, wouldn't you?
...to do their Star Wars comics.
That would make sense,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
Yeah, it does make sense, yeah.
Did you ever read the old Star Wars Marvel comics?
I used to read, like, ROTJ magazine and stuff like that, but...
They weren't as good as the best of the Dark Horse comics, but I am very fond of them.
What was that? So, the quite one on the Crimson thingy-me-jiggy.
The Crimson Pirate.
Was what I also
the Crimson about, Empire.
Something like that. What I also enjoyed about ROTJ magazine is they would like serialise stuff like Time Bandits.
Yes, they would. Mm. Can you just clarify for the listener in case they don't know, what ROTJ stands for.
It was the Return of the Jedi magazine.
Okay. Somebody asked me, one of our friends. I think it might have been Alex, but it might have been John.
Hi, Alex.
Hi, Alex and John. It might have been one of those two, asked me in which order we were talking about Star Wars. This must be great for our colleagues. We now all work in the same place, so we sometimes have lunch together. And so it must be great for any of our colleagues who are caught near us to hear all of the geeky wisdom
Jane
that
and
ends
I are
up
try
being
get
spouted out into
year.
The world. That'd be good.
Actually, I'd like a job there next year, so find me one first.
I didn't find first. John his one. He had to find it himself.
Well, James better at a job than I am.
Okay.
What? So that makes me more employable.
Yes, I was asked by one of them which order I would show, if I had children in the future, which order I would show them the Star Wars films. And I found that a really interesting question.
Easy. 1, 4, 5, 6.
1, 4, 5, 6.
My answer was, well, I wouldn't show them any of them because that would mean I would have to sit through them again. And I'm sure there are plenty of films I don't think aren't very good anymore that I could show them. You could basically go through the Pixar catalogue several times and a child would be perfectly happy with that. You don't ever have to show them any of them.
Scarlett seems perfectly happy with the excellent Disney Tinkerbell movies at the moment.
Oh, yeah. And it's probably unlikely I'll be showing them The Hobbit.
Why?
Well, because it's 3 bloody hours long. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, so I can't comment. But it doesn't sound very good.
Oh.
Sorry.
I had a glowing review of it today, admittedly from an idiot, but I did have a glowing review.
I don't know that all of the glowing reviews have been from idiots. I think lots of people have quite liked it. But one of the things that I've always defined The Hobbit by, we've kind of skipped onto another bit of news, which is that The Hobbit came out over here recently.
That's a massive piece of comic book news. So yeah,
The thing that has always defined The Hobbit for me, as opposed to Lord of the Rings, is The Hobbit as a story was long enough for me as a child to actually finish reading, which never happened with Lord of the Rings.
I've read The Silmarillion, I've read Lord of the Rings well over a dozen times. I've never read The Hobbit.
What was The Silmarillion similar to?
A drunk, vomiting dog.
And how many times have you read it?
Once. It's enough.
Oh, okay.
Oh, God, it's confused. I mean, I tell you what, after The Hobbit is done, there are a ton of stories that Peter Jackson can go on to extrapolate from The Silmarillion. I mean, it's a great
excellent
sort of reference book for people who want to create stories in Middle-earth.
He could literally never make another film based on his own stuff ever again.
I'm quite happy to have films based in Middle-earth released every couple of years because I find it a fascinating universe.
Milieu.
Yeah, milieu is good.
Dan Slott apparently was getting threats on Twitter this week. The only thing, because of Spider-Man...
Right. No, that's rational, yeah.
Because, the only thing I really want to say about that is, people, you don't need to threaten each other. There's no need for all the threats of violence and all the nonsense and silliness.
Yeah.
Although I was thinking about Salman Rushdie today, he must be one of the only people who has managed to piss off fundamentalist Islam and the far right in America to roughly equal extent.
He's an equal opportunity antagonist.
Yeah, yeah, he's getting death threats from all over the place. Turns out the far right's a little bit less organised, but I mean that's besides the point.
They're still more organised than the right or the left.
No, that's God, isn't that true, James? Eh?
Yeah. Key ha. What is it good for?
Talking about comics.
Greetings, monkeys. This is Keycar, see my spread, my mighty feathers. I'm talking today about Popo Pukka. I cannot pronounce words in English, never mind American Indian dialects, which is a story in the Bayou Akana collection. Now, this is written by Alex Conman and the art is by Vicky Stonebridge, the art girl. I'm not very good at describing art, which is a failing in a comics review, but the art has a kind of slightly abstract feel to it. Everything's identifiable as it is, but I think it's been done on a computer maybe, so there's kind of
layers which make it impressionistic, certainly more than the scenes. It's also got a very strong identity of colour palette on every page, and that colour palette shifting from environment to environment, so you have a blanched field for urban settings, you have a sort of rich rifle green background for those set in the bayou, and sort of softer hue for what I hesitate to call a romantic scene. White for some flashbacks, it varies quite significantly. Now, it's kind of set up a story of ethnic identity and kind of relationship to assimilated America. Again, I don't want to go into it in too much depth. It has a sort of story about the steps that people take in emotional coldness to protect themselves, which again works quite well. And maybe how reaching back to your past can point you in the direction of something innocent. And again, it works very well. The art for me is a touch distancing. It does work, but I think it's just a matter of personal taste. But I say that, the more I'm looking at it, the more I'm starting to like it. I'm terribly voracious at reading comics. I'm not giving all due attention to many hours of labour that an artist puts in. But again, another winner in this collection of Bayou Akana. That's Kiha from Dissecting Worlds, the podcast that examines fictional universes and when they are found wanting, sends them to death.
Would you like to see your spotlight, Jane?
Yes,
What is it?
It is.
What is it?
A book.
Who's it by?
By Kate Brown.
Okay.
It's called Fish and Chocolate. And it's a
bit... That sounds like a disgusting combination.
No, not
things.
If you think about chocolate-shaped fish. No, fish-shaped chocolate, even.
Oh, the, like in Ben and Jerry's fish food.
Yes.
Or little...
But no, just the little ones you used to get at the sweet shop. The chocolate
No,
fish.
The little ones you used to get at the sweet shop.
Yeah.
I didn't used to get them.
I reckon
you?
Little salted...
And you used to get chips as well. No, white chocolate.
She doesn't care about your little salted.
Little salted sardines with... Like some really nice, that might be quite nice though. A certain sort of ice cream, maybe?
No!
Chocolate ice cream. No. I'm thinking of ice cream, not chocolate. I don't know where I've gone with that.
It's published by Self-Made Hero. And on the back of this book, it says £14.99.
Oh, sterling.
Yes, £14.99.
Oh.
But I bought this at Thought Bubble from Kate Brown herself, and it has...
Did you get it for free? She fell in love with you.
No.
Okay.
I didn't, yeah. She had run out of books, so I had to go to another store to get them, and then she said she'd scribble on it for me. She did.
She couldn't...
Well, not scribble, but she very nicely wrote for Jane.
The problem is, and if you'd been there, if you were there, listener, you'll know this, but James wasn't there, so he won't have that much of a sense of the geography, but... Kate Brown was sat right next to David Wynne, and so whenever Jane was near Kate Brown, she was probably still in like talking to our mate David Wynne mode. And you know, like how when Jane's comfortable around people, she's like farting and belching and swearing and stuff. So it's possible that she couldn't really have wowed Kate Brown to the extent that she normally would.
I'm familiar with the geography of David Wynne, though.
Everyone's familiar with the geography of David Wynne. Not quite as familiar as you are, though. You're going to do a degree in it next year, aren't you?
I'm hoping to.
Fish and Chocolate is three short stories based on a mother-child relationship. Each story is quite harrowing. They haven't got nice endings. And it's about vulnerability and... I keep stroking the book, I'm really sorry. It's about...
It looks like a lovely book.
Vulnerability and the fear of loss or something happened to your child. The first story is called The Piper Man, and I think we can probably guess what that's about. It's a mum who's very busy. She's got two children. One of them's acting out quite a bit. There's a man in the neighbourhood who the kids seem to be strangely drawn to, and they really don't like, none of the parents really like their children being anywhere near him, and he's not doing anything wrong. He's you know, doing things like, you know, when you get a blade of grass and you put it between your two thumbs and cup your hands together and you can make a sort of owl noise. He's doing things like that, and he's sort of, the kids are quite intrigued by him. As this story goes on, our particular mum in this story gets really quite, almost irrationally, but quite understandably wary of this man and doesn't want his kids to be anywhere near him. And, you know, there's one point where he's up on a roof near their garden, and the kids want him to play. He's not saying anything. This guy doesn't say anything. He wants him to play. And then she sees this and she's quite horrified and wants him to come in. She's very like, don't go near him. Don't be anywhere near him. And yeah, the story continues and children continue to become more drawn to him. And I don't want to spoil each little story too much, but there's definitely...
It sounds familiar with the fairy tale.
Yeah, of course, yeah. There's the story of the Pied Piper, which... isn't it about the Pied Piper comes to town and he offers to get rid of all the rats?
Yeah, they make a deal with him.
And then he ends up taking the children. So it's a modern-day twist on that fairy tale, which is brilliant, especially with everything that's been going on at the moment. It's very... current, almost. Yeah. I imagine it's always in the back of a parent's mind, but this is very current.
Is Jimmy Savile always in the back of your mind?
Jimmy Savile is always on my mind.
Are they?
He is always on my mind.
And yeah, there's the sense of loss of control and not being able to protect your children.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the biggest thing.
That sounds creepy, and like James wouldn't necessarily have the stomach for it.
I've got the stomach for a great many things.
As a parent.
The second story, The Cherry Tree. Oh, this is, the art in this is gorgeous. I'll talk a bit about that at the end, but this particular story had my favourite sort of theme art in it. It's beautiful. The Cherry Tree is about a mum and her daughter who have moved to a new house. The mum is a musician and is trying to write songs and needs to concentrate. And the daughter is absolutely mesmerised by this beautiful house and a gorgeous garden and a cherry tree. Which the cherry tree is a sense of wonder and danger at the same time. The daughter, I don't know her name, which is really, I don't really know if you do find out their name.
We're really good with names on this podcast.
Let's call her Chloe.
No, it's...
Jasmine.
Prisca?
Eloise. Oh, Prisca, no, yeah. Prisca's probably a bit better than... Yeah, it's probably just short for Priscilla.
Maybe, I don't know.
Or Prisca Tonic.
Prisca, she, What?
What are you laughing about?
I've never heard
Priscatonic University. Yeah. I've just made it up.
Oh, good. It sounds like a robot.
This is the mum's. This again, as a parent, she's frustrated because she can't get over work, and she's got a daughter who, you know, kids need attention, and she wants, you know, she wants to show her mum things, and she gets into scrapes, and she starts, you know, gets upset about things, and she hurts herself. In one instance, she does hurt herself quite a lot, and her mum loses her rag with her. You know, she's frustrated. She's trying to get on with her work. She's trying to concentrate on the music, and she's got a constant, you know, pestering child. You know, who isn't actually pestering. She's just, you know, doing what children do. Again, the. This is more of a gentle story of loss, and not. And I guess this is more about neglect than it is actually protection. So, or taking for granted that your children need you, and that you need to, you know, be careful what you say, and you do lose your rag and things like that.
Oh, so. Kids are like cats. If they don't think you're looking after them properly, they just go next door.
Is that true?
Well, do you, maybe?
And the third story, which is probably the most sad of all three, is called Matryoshka. I can't say that.
Matryoshka. That's what those nesting dolls. That's what they are.
Oh God, Matryoshka. Sorry, that's terrible. Matryoshka.
It's a Russian word.
No,
it's fine.
I've never heard it before. Probably because we're all ignorant and we just call them their little Russian.
Well, you and I are ignorant.
I knew what it was. It is a weird word, though. It's a Russian word, I think.
It is.
This is about a very distant and removed person who, it starts with her talking to a friend who turns out to be a work colleague, and the way the colleague talks, the speech bubbles for her are faded. You can see that's not anything she's saying is not of importance. It's not, you know, this other character's just not taking it in, doesn't, you know, she's just sort of completely removed from what's happening. And as the conversation goes on, our main protagonist in the story loses her temper and tells her to leave quite abruptly and quite angrily.
Oh, fuck off.
Almost aggressively, because she does sort of knock over some drinks. I don't know what her name, I don't think we find out her name too. But
wasting drinks is the worst thing a person can do. Well, I mean, there are worse things. No. But at this moment in time, I can't imagine any of them.
You've got to look after precious liquids, haven't you?
Yeah.
The funny thing about the start of this story is her colleague is almost criticising her a bit. When I first read this, I thought the colleague was the mum and the removed person character was the daughter, because it's the way that it's almost like a condescending, passive, I found some juice that's in day, or that food was looking really mouldy so I threw it out. That kind of weird passive help,
fussy mumsy stuff,
but kind of like I was saving that for a day when I wanted mouldy food, you know, that kind of weird
grumpy aggressive teenager.
I
recognise this.
Yeah, but that wasn't it. It was she turned out to be a colleague, and you find out that she had the main protagonist had quite a horrific loss. A very horrific loss. And you do find out how that happened through the interpretation of the pictures. And it's the metaphors of her body and the state she's in, where you find out what happened to her, and it's very sad and tragic, and the character has moments. She's very deep in depression, very deep in depression. She has a moment of almost realization towards the end, where she sort of, you know, she realises you can't go on like this. So not so not as sinister. I've just made that out to be towards the end, but it's just what isn't said in these stories that really has the most punch. And it's like, I'm not a parent, but I can understand.
That's true. You don't know.
Okay.
Some people might have lied to you down in the past.
What?
Hang on, James, you might be missing something.
Yeah, I have to go through something that I pretty much can't ignore.
Actually, I think more specifically, James missing something.
No, that's true. I don't know what he's talking about now. Are you suggesting alien
Depends how you abduction? Interpret that. Actually, there's one way of interpreting what I just said as being the most misogynistic thing I've ever said in my life.
That's true.
Yeah.
What?
Partially.
Okay, I'll fix this one in the edit, James.
Yeah, so it's what's not said, it's what's in the pictures that really packs a punch in this book. It's each story's really well told. It is about the like I said, I'm not a parent, but I can feel the sense of, you can definitely relate to the whole, you know, oh my god, you don't want anything bad to happen to someone you love so, you know, so much. You created this person and you want everything to be right for them, but at the same time there are frustrations and there are things that dealing with another human being bring. So James is looking at me a bit
funny. I think Scarlett would probably be able to relate to the frustration that living with other human beings can bring.
Great hairy anuses.
Maybe, yeah. It's beautiful. The stories are really well told. The art's utterly gorgeous. I mean, the fact that the cover is so striking, it's a yellow background and there's a picture of a woman on a chair who I think's pregnant, with her a blindfold. But the actual colouring and the style is really, really nice.
It's really crisp, beautiful colour.
It is,
and
and stuff. Each story has different themed coloured.
It looks like each one's got its own palette,
got different hues, different palettes to bring out. So you know, you understand what's going on in the story a bit more, just gives you more of a feel for what's going on. And that's why the Cherry Tree one's my favourite. It just feels like spring and summer and feels like playing out in the garden, and it feels really, really nice. But it has that kind of cherry tone to it, which is obviously what the story's about. And the last one has a green despair kind of hue to it. It's perfectly done. It's brilliant.
It looks like apples.
And it does, and the last story, where it gets darker, the pages get darker. It gets really, really does. Very simple, but really, really effectively done. But, yeah, it's brilliant. That's all I have to say about that book. Yeah, it is lovely.
I see it in, you can't miss it on the shelves in the comic store, and I see it a lot.
Yeah, it is definitely one that you remember, and I keep rubbing the book. I need to stop doing that.
I think it might be on my Amazon wish list, if anyone wants to buy me it. So I can read it too.
If you're listening, Santa.
You should definitely go check it out. It's a really good book. It's definitely one that will stick with you for a little while.
Mm. Thank you, Jane. That was lovely.
I really regret shouting out Great Hairy Anuses halfway through our review.
It's too late now. Yeah. It's in there now. And your voice has taken on this weird sort of...
It's shame. It is shame.
That was a very odd thing to shout.
It was a shame warble.
Yeah, it was a very odd thing to shout in response to your put down, wasn't it?
Well, it's all right, don't go on about it.
Well, I'm obsessing about it a little bit.
The
I told you, I still obsess about slights. Stupid things I did when I was 8, so it's...
A person should not only be measured by the loud and obnoxious things they blurt out during the recording of a podcast, but about how they deal with it afterwards.
Oh, God.
And right now, you're showing regret. Admittedly, but you're maybe overdoing it a little bit.
Should we distract him by asking you, Nicholas, what are you doing this week?
Well, we've had our two fake Christmases. That's something I didn't mention, but we have had our two fake Christmases over the last week. We had one with our friends Ock and Matt, and we had one with the in-laws, which was very nice as well. And thanks to the glorious power of the Amazon wish list, I haven't had to pretend I liked any presents yet this year, so it's been great. And so we've just got real Christmas coming up, which will be before our next show. That's very exciting. I'm very excited. I genuinely don't know what any of... The last fake Christmas I had, I knew I was going to get two volumes of Snarked by Roger Langridge because I'd bought them for myself with money that had been given to me. Yeah. So that was very exciting. I pretended to open those and be surprised at them. And I'm not going to have to do that now for real Christmas because I don't know anything I'm getting.
I was showing my Scarlet, because I'm collecting Snarks for her. She doesn't read it at the moment because I want her to be able to read it. I'm kind of saving it for when she's old enough. And all. But I was showing her one. I said, "That's Princess Scarlet." She said, "No!"
Well, why did she say no? Why has she got such a negative attitude?
Because she's Scarlet. She said, "No!"
Doesn't she understand that there can be more than one person called Scarlet?
Clearly not.
Her boy's like that, because, like, the thing I've noticed about my wife when we talk about, like, her sisters having a baby, when we talk about that, and we talk about potential baby names for our potential future children, there's always this thing about, oh, but we can't use that because, like, this other person we know has already used it. And I'm like, well, but what's wrong with two kids who know each other having the same name as each other?
I don't know, but we're all like it.
I'm not, obviously. I come from a family where there are about 70% of the boys are called George, and about 70% of the girls are called Maria or some variation of Maria. So Greeks don't have any imagination when it comes to this.
I did disagree with my wife about baby names, even though we're not expecting or planning in the very near future to have another one.
What was it about?
Nicola suggested she really liked the name Esther, and I said no religious names.
But that's interesting because you've recently converted to Judaism.
Yeah, but even so, I don't want any religious names. Because, you know, I don't necessarily want my children to follow me down the path of the righteous.
No, is that what we're calling it now, the path
Probably
of the righteous?
I doubt it.
You're one of the chosen people now.
I am one of the chosen people.
You chose yourself entirely inspired by the Bare Naked Ladies. Yeah. It's worth stating.
One of the Bare Naked Ladies songs.
Okay.
I also really like the song about the elf, though, so...
So you might have to also convert to
Bublé-ism.
Like Bublé-ism.
Oh God, don't do that. Michael, don't Michael, no don't. It's a cult.
Does he
cult.
Talk about elves?
No, don't.
He appears on that song.
Does he?
Mm.
Oh, so, but I mean, I was thinking more of like the younger people of Tumblr who believe in, who believe, or well, not just of Tumblr, of the world.
There's
who
an
believe,
immense amount of pornography on Tumblr.
Who believe it? In all of these peculiar, like mythical creatures and stuff like that. So you're not going to become otherkin?
No, I'm not going to become otherkin.
Because you'd look pretty good in maybe with those little elf ears. Maybe with your face painted blue. All naked except for like a little like Poison Ivy style.
I had a wisecracking elf character when I played Dungeons and Dragons many years ago called Frottage.
Frottage? Did you know what it meant?
Oh yeah.
And what sort of adventures did he get up to?
He got up to adventures that seemed very similar to David Gemmell novels, which we think our Dungeon Master had been reading at the time that he wrote the adventure for us.
I see. What was the thing? Did your character do one thing that you were particularly proud of?
God, I can't remember.
You can remember? He do so many things that you were proud of?
I can't remember. I really don't remember. It was a very long... It was about 20-odd years ago now. It was a long, long time ago.
I still remember what most of my Vampire the Masquerade characters got up to. Right. Mind you, it was mostly drinking and then some debauched stuff.
To be fair, I think...
Which is pretty much just the life I was living at the time.
Me as an individual, I was so enamored because most of the people I was playing D&D with were at least 10 years older than me.
Yeah.
And I was just excited to be in the company of more mature individuals. And it was quite flattering. They let me into their circle. Don't mean that in a rude way.
Can you remember where you left Frottage?
Oh God, I think
Frottage.
I think he was on a sea journey with the other characters in our group. I know I didn't get on very well with the paladin character.
So the last time you saw this, I guess an elf, so boyish looking elf. Mm. He was effectively the cabin boy. He was Frottage, the cabin boy. On his ocean-going journey with some grown-ups that you were hanging out with at the time.
Frottage took no shit from no one.
Okay. I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's storytelling. It's Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
I still don't know what you're talking about.
You're aware of Dungeons and Dragons.
I still don't know what you're talking about.
You're not aware of
I know Dungeons and Dragons. What I'm trying to say is I don't want to know what you're talking about.
I used to love D&D.
I guess ignorance is bliss when it's about Frottage and cabin boys.
Yeah, well, that's just... Yeah.
AD&D.
AD&D.
Advanced.
So mostly with people who had attention deficit
disorder.
Yeah, I was
going to say, you had ADD.
No, it's Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. It's advanced. Better, apparently. Yeah, there's
I'm
Dungeons
picturing
and Dragons
you
and then advanced
a quite wide-eyed, I imagine quite easily, you know, you were in awe of these grown-ups that you're hanging out with, all of them with ADD.
All of them with ADD.
And all of you pretending to be people you weren't.
Yeah.
Because who doesn't need to sometimes? I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, definitely. It was a lovely release.
So what are you doing this week, James?
I'm going to be
going back and reading my journals from the time and seeing if I can rediscover what was really going on.
Paging Dr. Freud. I'm going to Christmas.
You're going to Christmas. Jane, what are you going to be doing?
I'm going to Christmas too.
She's going to Christmas the arse off this Christmas.
Yeah, I have two
Christmases too.
I've had two already.
Although I was told the other day that Santa only comes once.
Apparently.
Poor Mrs. Claus.
Yeah. No, I think he'd probably, he's a gift giver, he'd probably take care of her first.
It's probably better gift than it is to receive.
Yeah, exactly. I can't do the same voice that James is doing.
Yeah, so that's that then.
So that's Christmas. We've got Christmas sorted. Jane's going to Christmas the arse off Christmas. Mm. You're probably going to be spending a lot of it crying, I'm honest. You can phone me if you find your old journals. You can phone me any time you want, okay?
Can you just let us read them and we'll be less painful?
Do you know what's really sad is I don't even have my AD&D Dungeon Master Guide, anymore. I have none of my D&D stuff.
Did you? You don't vaguely remember an occasion when you took them all into the back garden and set fire to them and everything else you owned at the time, but you can't really remember why you did it. You just did it.
I wasn't abused. I'm not saying people...
I'm not saying you were.
It was a nice friendly group. They were lovely to me.
It's interesting that that's where you went with that, because I wasn't suggesting that at all.
Oh, God.
Where do you think Frottage came from?
A teenage imagination, I think, is probably where that came from.
My
adult imagination is not much different.
I'm just going to Christmas the Christmas out of Christmas. Yeah. It's like Smurfs. I'm going to Smurf the Christmas out of Christmas.
I'm going to Christmas the Christmas out of you.
So that's that. Listener, you're probably going to Christmas the Christmas out of Christmas too.
So you should have a lovely Christmas.
Christmas it, Christmas fuckers.
Goodbye. Merry Christmas!
Me to cut all of the child abuse stuff.
There's just too much child abuse stuff in there for you to cut it all. No, that was fine. I quite enjoyed the D&D conversation. I had genuinely forgotten about Frottage, really.
Oh, okay.